Hello and welcome to this episode of the ESG Fitness Podcast that is going to be all about surfing the urge and getting in control of your actions. So somebody this week asked me what my tattoo means. And if you haven't seen it, and this is a podcast, so I can't show you, it is a wave and a rainbow. So sometimes if I can't be bothered, I'm just like, huh. I like waves and I'm gay, but there is a more serious answer to that. And the wave is actually somewhat symbolic to me, right? Anyway, I'm going to tell you why, because I think it's a very useful lesson. So let's get into it. Okay, so the reason that the wave is symbolic is I use it to remind me that feelings and urges come and go and that you can observe them without acting on them. So surf the urge, quote unquote, if you will, hence the tattoo. And the rainbow is actually not that symbolic, and it's just thought it looked quite nice. Anyway, your emotions don't have to control you. And a lot of people are controlled by their emotions. And this tends to lead to not the best outcomes and probably not always making choices that you're happy in hindsight that you made. And when you realize that you can choose your response instead of just reacting to what life throws at you, your whole life gets a hell of a lot better. And that ability is a superpower. Like, that ability in itself will change your life. And then on top of this, the wave also serves as a reminder that you can't truly feel the highs if you're always trying to avoid the lows, right? So happiness isn't about avoiding any negativity or any sadness or like toxic positivity. True happiness comes from embracing both. And if you try and numb the lows, that will mean that you also numb the highs. And you have to accept that there are both in life. Like, embracing life is about embracing both the ups and the downs. And then more recently, I've been thinking about this because I was reading a book by Adam Grant, and he talks a lot about how comparison and contrast matter, as in you're only happy in comparison to being sad. And if you were always happy, then you wouldn't really be happy, because it would just be like your preset, right? You'd probably become quite numb to that. We actually become quite accustomed and numb to anything that we experience all the time, right? It just becomes the norm. It's like when you first, I don't know, get a pay rise and you're like, wow, this is completely different. And then actually your lifestyle just molds to what it, your new income, and then it doesn't feel any different anymore. Now, that probably seems like somewhat abstract. And a more tangible example of this is money is a good example of this, right? You're only rich in comparison to others, right? £100 will make you rich in some parts of the world where they have very little, but that same £100 will leave you in poverty in other parts of the world where it's very expensive to live. Another example might be like doing 5 press-ups would make you, I don't know, one of the top women in your workplace in terms of your ability to do push-ups or your fitness levels. But if you go to an elite CrossFit gym, doing that same 5 press-ups is gonna leave you at the bottom of the pile, right? Everyone can probably do 50 in a row. So we're only anything in comparison to the others around us, which is kind of a weird concept. But once you get your head around it, and I thought quite a lot about this over the last couple of days, it does seem to hold true. Now, I'm sure there are exceptions to the rule, but I haven't come across any yet. And then this got me thinking, by the way, I'm going on a bit of a tangent here, but hopefully it's somewhat interesting, about theories around happiness. So if this theory that like you have to compare yourself essentially to others, like are you only a happy person in comparison to the other people around you, right? Or in comparison to what the norm of happiness is, probably, right? But if you're only ever low in comparison, is it beneficial for happiness to have low expectations? Because then you're always going to be surprised and happier when they're higher than what you expected. And this is kind of, again, an argument that I think Adam Grant puts in his book, is like, if you want to be happier, have really low expectations, right? So if you're like, oh, my expectation is I'm going to earn £20,000 a year, and then you earn more than that, then you're happy. But if your expectations are really high and you earn less than it, then you're sad. Even if the actual amount was the same, right? Let's say you ended up earning £50,000 a year. If you'd expected to earn £20,000, you'd be absolutely buzzing. If you expected to earn £100,000, you'd be pretty upset by that. But the actual amount is the same. Same with weight loss expectations, right? If you expected to lose £2 in a month and you lost three, you'd be buzzing. If you expected to lose £6 in a month and you only lost three, you'd be really pissed off. But it's the same £3. The only difference is your expectations. But then on the flip side of like having low expectations, and this would, I guess it's different concepts. Now I'm talking through this, I'm like, huh, that does actually kind of make quite a lot of sense. But when I was listening to it, I was like, I'm not sure that does make sense, because another argument is to have really high expectations because you get so much joy from the expectation of an experience, right? So if you're thinking about how incredible a holiday is going to be, you get a lot of joy from that anticipation. Now, even if it doesn't live up to how incredible you thought it was going to be, because the reality often doesn't, but your expectations, you've built a lot of joy from already, right? There's research that shows that people get half the joy from the expectation of an event rather than the event itself. So do those conflict, or do you need to think more that if it's personal to you and something you're gonna... No, I don't know. I haven't figured it out. I'll come back to this. Anyway, the thing that is really useful about what my tattoo symbolizes is this surf the urge notion. It's a technique that's used in therapy, and this is actually what I want to talk about today, because everyone can implement it into their lives. It's going to help you diet, it's going to help you have better relationships, it's going to help you make choices that you're actually proud of. The main concept of surfing the urge is that feelings and urges can and will come and go, even if you don't act on them. And it's built on the premise that although feelings are real, they aren't always useful, and they don't always require a response. And when you stop reacting to every single urge you have, you realize that it's a skill that you can nurture and develop and get better at. Like, is it hard? Yes, absolutely. Most things worth doing are hard, and you won't get it right all the time. And sometimes you will maybe overeat when you'd plan not to, or snap at your kids, or snap at your partner in an argument, and you'll react in a way that you didn't want to react because you hadn't taken the time to think about it and respond. The aim of this isn't perfection. It's to reduce the occurrence rate, right? We're all human. And like with most things, it's hard at the start, right? Especially if you have ADHD and you really struggle with impulse control. This is kind of half the reason that like it was so important to me to get the tattoos. I'm like, I realize that that's something I struggle with, so I'll have to work harder than others. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not going to do it. That just means I'm going to work a little bit harder on it. And the more you do it, the easier it becomes. So in practice, this is kind of how it works. You have to be able to observe how you feel. This gives you a bit of perspective. Then you identify what triggered it. So figuring out your triggers will tell you a lot about yourself. And once you figure out that trigger, you can kind of rationalize it. And again, it helps you give a bit of perspective. So as an example of this, you might say, come home from work and be like, I really feel like just face planting a pizza. Okay, that's how I feel. What's triggered that? Okay, really stressful day at work. I also skipped lunch. And I just feel a little bit in self-destruct mode. Okay, once I've got this perspective, is this a good idea? Like, you know, what might be a better choice? Now, you can then use things like distraction techniques. And I would recommend having a go-to, right? So in that situation, it's really easy just to pick up your phone and order an Uber Eats and then be like, well, you know what, it's done. But having a bit of a distraction technique, or even just the kind of rule that you set yourself, like this is a rule I set myself, I'm like, okay, let's figure this out before you make that choice. If you want to do that, fine, but why? If my why was, I just really feel like a pizza, I'm not going to face plant it all and eat until I'm uncomfortably full, but I just want some pizza, that's very different than I'm doing this to kind of numb my emotions, self-sabotage my efforts a little bit, because I know that fitness or fat loss or improving my diet at the moment is a goal that I have. That's a very different rationale for why. So this is why you need to observe how you feel first and identify what triggered how you feel, and then decide how you want to respond to that. Now, the distraction technique comes in because if you come back to the wave analogy, this will pass whether you act on it or not. I am willing to bet if you distract yourself a bit, go to bed, you know, have a healthy meal, go to bed, wake up in the morning, you're not going to wake up in the morning wanting to faceplant that same pizza. Time often just allows urges to pass, right? But most of us just feel so strongly about acting on them in the moment, and that's a very hard thing to do, right? It's essentially the crux of self-control, and everybody struggles with that. If we could all delay gratification, we'd probably all already have reached all of our goals. That's fundamentally what it is, right? People don't... I saw this the other day, and I can't remember where I saw it, but someone said, people don't fail, they quit. And it's such a simple but true analogy. Like, most people are completely capable of reaching all of their goals. They don't fail, they quit. They don't fail in that, like, it's not possible to get there. They quit too soon, right? They give up. So as an example of surfing the urge a little bit, if you know that you tend to overeat on chocolate after dinner, you could create a bit of a distraction where you go upstairs away from the kitchen and read a book for 10 minutes or something. That's often long enough for that wave to pass. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't, but most of the time, really, honestly, it's a 10-minute thing. And it's the stopping of eating often. But if you figured out, okay, that's my trigger is after dinner when I'm still a little bit hungry, but actually I've already had a really nice satiating meal, and maybe you do have a bit of chocolate, but you don't want to overeat it. Okay, once you've had that bit of chocolate, then you're going to go upstairs, you're going to read a book for 10 minutes. You're far less likely to then go back downstairs and start overeating again. And you'll notice that the urge passes when you create a bit of distance. And this distance here, in this example of like not only physically removing yourself from the kitchen, but also creating some mental stimulation about something else, so reading a book or listening to a podcast, this one is available, then that's going to allow you to then make a better decision afterwards. I hope that this episode was useful for you. Do try this technique. Do notice that these urges passes without do notice that these urges pass without you acting on them. I think that's one of the biggest things. Even things like anger as well. Like, take a step away. Don't react in the moment. Give yourself space and time to respond to things. And I'm sorry that this was a little bit everywhere. My brain feels a little bit like that at the moment. I've read probably too many things and haven't had time to conceptualize them all into exactly how I think. So I was using this podcast to do that. But I hope it was somewhat interesting, and I hope that made you think as well. And then the other thing I want to say about the wave is that the last thing it symbolizes is that no matter how shit things get, they pass, right? Just like a wave. The ups and downs of life are somewhat inevitable, but at least you know that they're going to pass. Which actually leads into a question that I got in the Commit to Six group about how to manage your hormones, or not so much how to manage your hormones, but how to manage your mood around your menstrual cycle. Now, I can't emphasize this enough. Do not underestimate the impact of hormones on your general perception of life. And that might seem drastic, but your mood, your body image, your hunger, your sleep are all impacted throughout your menstrual cycle by fluctuating hormones. Now, I don't suffer half as bad as many people do, but I'll often have like 4 days a month where I honestly just want to quit everything, can't be bothered to do anything. And one of the symptoms of PMS is having no interest in your usual activities. So don't beat yourself up if you're like, oh, just don't have the drive to get to the gym. I don't have the want to go out for a walk or to eat healthy. Like, this is a completely normal feeling. So how do you manage that? Well, this is how I manage it, right? And everyone is different, but my approach is, I know myself, I know my hormones, you know, I've been a functioning woman for many years now. I know that my mood, I know that these things will happen every month, right? I know that my mood is impacted, and I know that every month I'm gonna have a couple of days where I probably don't trust exactly how I'm feeling, but those feelings are very real and that makes it hard, right? But I also know that this will pass, much like the wave. And so I can choose not to listen to myself at that time of month. Now, obvious statement, is this easier said than done? Yes, lots of things are. But my approach is, I know it's about 4 days. I know it's going to pass. So I make sure that I tick the boxes anyway, and I plan ahead because I know that I'm not going to be motivated. And it's probably a bit of an unpopular opinion in this day and age on social media, but I don't listen to my hunger signals because I know they're higher. I don't follow my intuition because it's definitely not in line with what I want long term. And I don't make big or important decisions. And I'm conscious of doing that. Like, for that week, I will not do that. Everything can wait a week. And part of getting the most out of yourself is knowing how to manage yourself so that you don't self-destruct. Not giving up when it's hard is what gets you results. And it, you know, what gets you results isn't doing workouts when you feel really motivated, and it's not going for a walk along the beach in the sun to get your steps in, and it's not prepping all your meals because you've got a whole Sunday free just to prep for the week. Like, that's the easy bit. Great, do that stuff too. But actually what gets you results is staying consistent when you don't want to. That's the difference. That's the hard part, and that's when most people give up. But you, because you're listening to this podcast, are not most people. Okay, I'm going to wrap this up here. I hope that's been useful. I hope you enjoy the podcast. If you haven't rated it and you love it, please do. And if you are interested in coaching, head over to esgfitness.co.uk, fill in the application form, tell me a little bit about you, and let's see if we're a good fit.